Wendy's breakfast faves are 2 for $4. Choose between the honey butter chicken biscuit, classic bacon egg and cheese, or classic sausage egg and cheese. You have to tell a friend, and they'll tell a friend, and they'll tell a friend, and they'll...
Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Online, find us at jimbohannonshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jimbo Talks. Getting all set for that next stimulus package? Mike Grazia says, don't hold your breath.
There will not be a new COVID-19 stimulus package before Election Day. President Donald Trump, who is quarantining in the White House with a case of COVID, announced via tweet he's asked Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to put all of his focus on confirming Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. On Capitol Hill, McConnell was asked about Trump's decision.
His view was that they were not going to produce a result, and that we needed to concentrate on what's achievable.
Trump announced his decision despite remarks earlier in the day from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, who warned of unnecessary hardship for households and businesses without government support. Mike Grazia, Washington.
And so we'll talk about that tonight in this portion of the program with your calls at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, and with economic analyst and commercial banker Kevin Howard, who joins us this evening. He is the author, by the way, of the book Onward at Last, and we'll mention that before we're done. Thanks for joining us, Kevin.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. It is a pleasure to be here to talk to you tonight.
Thank you so much. We, of course, now look out on what we face here. Obviously, there can still be a lame duck session of Congress after the election, and we are, as we speak here tonight, now at 4 weeks until election night, so it wouldn't be waiting forever, but I guess if you're in dire need of some economic help, it may feel like forever.
Oh, it definitely feels like forever for several people in the country right now, and several businesses in the country right now. You see, Jim, the problem is this. We have a scale problem. Okay, so follow me here, right? Typically, we talk economic stimulus during the business cycle where you have an economic recession. Well, COVID has presented us with a magnitude of economic recession that we've never seen before. So we just recently had, in the summertime, they announced the second quarter GDP numbers. And they've been revised and revised again. But at the end of the day, the U.S. economy contracted 31%. Now, to give you some magnitude, and that's annualized, but to give you some magnitude, the largest contraction in any quarter in U.S. history was first quarter 1958, when the U.S. economy contracted 10% on an annualized basis. So the COVID contraction that we're talking about is three times the greatest contraction in U.S. history. And so,
how does that compare with the Great Depression, which is, of course, the benchmark we usually use when talking about the greatest?
Oh, you're absolutely right. The irony of the situation is Eisenhower's contraction in first quarter of 1958 exceeded the greatest contraction at any time during the Great Depression. So the greatest of all time prior to COVID was 10% annualized. I mean, and so that's what I'm saying. This is the greatest recorded contraction of economic activity in the United States, right? And so that's what happened April, May, and June. Right. And yes, they're expecting to have somewhat of a recovery in third quarter. But that's a case of, you know, the old statement about economics. You know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Right.
Well, we're about to find that out when they announce, you know, 25% GDP growth in third quarter. But that's compared to the basis of that deep contraction in the second quarter.
Of course. Go ahead.
Yes. And so the government did step in. And Congress passed a series of stimulus packages, as we all know, culminating in the CARES Act, which authorized $2.1 trillion of stimulus from the Congress, but it also authorized, and this part never gets reported, it authorized the Federal Reserve to inject another $4.25 trillion in stimulus. And so the federal response absolutely prevented the U.S. economy from collapsing. And it would have collapsed in the absence of that response. But the problem is that stimulus is running out. And so you have to ask yourself, we know the only thing that Congress does well, the only thing that Congress does well is spend money. So how is it possible during a presidential election year, you know, that they can go on recess in August and they're about to go on recess again and tell the American public and all the businesses that are on the brink of failure, right, that they're not going to pass a stimulus package after we ask for your vote?
Well, of course, how they can do it is very simple, because both parties in every election year reach a point, and it's being reached earlier and earlier, a point at which they decide, either singularly or collectively, they would rather have an issue to beat their opponent over the head with in November than they would to have a solution that they could take back to the public. And I think both sides believe it is politically advantageous to more or less stick to their guns here. Now, that may be false calculus, and it may be very cynical calculus, but I think that's what we're talking about.
Well, the thing about it is, and I, you know, you've been around this block of time or two, Jim, about politics in America. There's no segment of the electorate that wasn't impacted by COVID. You know, and so let me just say, there's no part of the electorate who's saying, oh, it'd be okay if only the Democrats had agreed, or it would be okay if only the Republicans had agreed, when you're facing foreclosure or you're facing repossession or you're facing, you know, the closure of your business. And so what I'm saying here is we never know the why, the ultimate why of our government action in real time. And sometimes we find out why they do what they do decades later. So whatever we're going to see now is going to be involve some speculation. But let's consider, in my opinion, I don't think they have a choice. I think because of the magnitude of the contraction that we're talking about, just think about the trillions of dollars of economic activity that is lost, but that never happened because COVID occurred. And that's compounding every day, right? Okay, there's no way that the government can pay enough money to replace that hole.
Okay, oh, probably not. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's the magnitude of the problem. Okay. So it's possible that we've actually reached the limit of Keynesian economics. It's possible that what's and you know what that limit is called? That limit is called the bond vigilantes.
You probably, for those of us who didn't get past Econ 101, maybe you'd better back up a little bit and hold us by the hand here, okay?
No, this is, and the great news about this is macroeconomics that would be taught in any freshman college course.
Okay.
There's not complex economics here. So, okay, so we currently have $27 trillion in debt. Okay. The Congress currently passed in the CARES Act in March, $2.1 trillion in debt. Previously, they passed another $900 billion in new debt. And then they authorized the Fed to print $4.25 trillion in new money to inject into the economy. Okay. So while that was going on, okay, the GDP, the productivity of the country, contracted greater than at any point in U.S. history. So all that stimulus started expiring in July. But in the middle of July, China made an announcement that got little play on Wall Street, little play in the country. China said in the middle of July that if the Federal Reserve continues to dilute the U.S. dollar, they would start selling a substantial amount of U.S. debt. And then Congress, which was in the process of passing new stimulus and extending the payroll protection plan, all of a sudden they couldn't come to an agreement, and they let it expire in July. And then the payroll protection plan, the application windows closed August 8th, right? Okay. And then they went on recess. And they're about to go on recess again.
Right. And well, so let me know one thing. Well, go ahead and make your contention, but I do have some questions here, so please continue.
Sure. My contention is simple. The bond vigilantes, we only heard of them when we're talking about Greece and they're trying to raise new funds, right? And and the joke was, you know, this would never happen to us. Well, what China was saying here is the Federal Reserve, all that federal stimulus, at least the money that's being printed by the Federal Reserve, because they don't incur debt, they just create new money, right? That's diluting the value of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah. Well, now, one thing I would note in terms of course, the value of the U.S. dollar, if we were worried that much about that, we wouldn't have gone into as much hawk as we currently are. And the vast majority, of course, of our indebtedness was put there not by virtue of a Hail Mary pass to keep us going in times of crisis. It was put there because we're too damn cheap to pay our own bills as we go along and would rather have our kids and our grandkids pay for it. Now, then, one thing I would note there, on a non-economic basis, there are a lot worse things that could happen to us than having somebody besides China own that much of our debt, okay? Because China would not be above using that as blackmail in circles beyond the purely economic, diplomatic, even military. And so it's not as though there is no upside to China unloading our debt. And if it pushed us further in the direction of actually paying as we went, then that's probably in the same category as a drug dealer cutting off a junkie. That is to say, the kindest thing they could do to the junkie. So your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's an interesting point. Well, all I would say is there's $7.1 trillion of our debt held by foreign governments. So just imagine if you held U.S. debt, right? So you hold debt. So the face value of that debt is going to be paid at some point in the future.
If you right? If you own a U.S. savings bond, that means you own part of the debt.
Yeah, you own part of the debt, right? Exactly. So let's say it's a 10-year treasury. And so in 10 years, you're going to get the face value of that, of that treasury bill. Okay. If we are diluting the dollar materially, right? Then what effect that would have is you're going to get paid back in dollars that are less worth.
Absolutely. I mean, if you've got to figure out what inflation will be compared with the interest rate on that, that may not be a good deal.
No, exactly. And so if you have an economy, even China's economy or the Netherlands, that's a major holder of our debt, their economies are being supported by the interest payments we're paying. We paid $400 billion in interest payments in 2019. So if we're going to pay them back in less valued money, it will threaten their economies. Well, so it's not trying to be, you know, vicious or hyper competitive.
Right.
We are diluting the U.S. dollar now.
And of course, we do so anyway. We do have to pause occasionally and pay some of our own bills. And we will do that and be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We're talking with economic analyst and commercial banker Kevin Howard. His website, by the way, is theuniversalonenessblog.com. I'll repeat that, theuniversalonenessblog.com. We'll take a call or two here, but first, let me simply note that recessions can be cyclical. 1958, I think, could be described as cyclical. 1929, there were certainly a lot of systemic problems in our economy. Despite the Roaring Twenties, we were borrowing an awful lot of money to buy stocks and the like. A lot of the reforms that came with the Securities and Exchange Commission hadn't existed yet. This time, by contrast, we very arbitrarily just shut down the economy. There was nothing that I can think of that was inherently wrong. Sure, there would have been a correction to our booming economy eventually, but I don't see anything out there that says that once we turn the switch back the other way, that we can't have what they're calling now a V-shaped recovery. But of course, then again, I don't have that degree in economics, Kevin, so you tell me.
Well, this is going to be, this is just the deepest contraction that we've experienced in our history. So the issue is going to be almost like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? So you have major industrial producers who were compelled to shut down production, right? And you had demand, consumers stopped buying, right? Right, and because everyone was responding to COVID. And so now when you tag on the trillions of dollars of lost economic activity that's affected every business in the country, right? Okay, so that's lost capital. So the producers are going to be extremely discriminating in how they deploy their scarce capital when we reopen full force, right?
Yeah. Okay.
But the consumers, they're not going to spend like they did in February. Most consumers, you know, now are going to probably save much more like we used to save, let's say, in the Archie Bunker generation.
Okay, right. They're going to be a little gun shy. Understand. All right. Got it.
That's right.
All right.
Which means that GDP growth is going to be nothing like, you know, demand is going to be nothing like it was.
So it isn't a pent up demand. It's going to be a frightened non-demand. Okay. I can understand that mentality, obviously. A call here from Kenneth in Youngstown, Ohio. Hello, Kenneth. Put another way. Hello, Kenneth.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the radio, Kenneth. What's on your mind? Quicker than that, actually. Do you have something to ask or to say? Well, all right. Again, thanks for your non-call. Here's a call from Chance in Waterloo, Iowa, next on the Jim Bohannon Show. Hello, Chance.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thank you. What's on your mind?
My question I have is, how can we justify when we add the $600 extra to the unemployment, and that adds up off of the last, when the last stimulus check was, that added up to about $12,000, and then you ask us essential workers that had to show up every day to work, and we got a measly $1,200 check for people that were sitting at home doing nothing. And then they had no urge to go back to work because they were getting an extra $600.
All right. Are we talking in the time that we have left? Are we talking about an economic incentive not to work, Kevin?
Well, that was the concern, because there was no doubt that the initial stimulus, the $600 for many people, and by the way, including my son, who was a bartender in Phoenix, right? That was greater earnings than they were earning. And but we have data on this. So that program expired the end of July. And since then, we're tracking every week, to what extent are unemployment claims going down. And the data does not support that a material number of those folks now return to those jobs that pay less.
All right. Now, in the limited time that we have, I would like to mention your book, Onward, At Last, if you could tell us a bit about what that is.
Yeah, Onward, At Last is it's a book of commentaries that really, it's a clarion call to our fellow Americans that very few of us know personal fulfillment. And the central question in the book is it because our core values as Americans, independence, self-interest, right, competition, have been pushed to an extreme to where they don't serve us anymore? So look at that call of Chance. Okay, he's an essential worker. In the competition for resources to take care of ourselves and our family, we're beating Chance. We're defeating the essential workers, because they're some of the lowest paid people in our economy. And yet all of us rely on them, right? This is a level of competition that's self-defeating. And so Onward, At Last brings us through this process of trying to remind us as Americans who we are, right? And I hope people read it.
Very good. It's Onward, At Last, and you can get that, I assume, on Amazon, right?
Yes, it's available on Amazon, Audible, and on iTunes.
All right, 10 seconds to go. Are you an optimist or a pessimist?
I am an optimist. We'll get through this.
I am hopeful that is the case. Thanks very much to Kevin Howard, economic analyst, commercial banker, and the author of Onward, At Last. We'll be back on the Bohannon Show.